recently started reading a book called The Game. It's written by Neil Strauss. I know he's now since come out against it, particularly the practices he describes in it, but it's a memoir about his experience of learning how to manipulate women sexually through the use of things like post-hypnotic suggestion and other psychologically manipulative strategies. Now, isn't it interesting that despite knowing that there are such resources like this book, and even online groups encouraging predatory behavior, we still hold victims responsible for abuse? Thank you so much for joining me today on Breaking Free from Narcissistic Abuse. I'm your host, Dr. Carrie Kerr McAvoy, a mental health specialist with over 20 years of counseling experience and a narcissistic abuse survivor. In this episode, we're going to take a closer look at the dynamics of abuse and the responsibility for abusive and predatory behavior. Is it the problem of the victim? Should we hold victims accountable? Or is it actually a cultural bias that champions independence and autonomy? Something we're self-made people here in the United States. Is that cultural bias causing a blind spot? Is it possible that we're missing the subtle nuances of exploitive and manipulative behavior? I'm thrilled you're here with me today. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes and leave a review and let me know what you think of the show. And finally, thank you for your donation to this listener-supported podcast. Together, we're shedding light on all things related to abuse. So with that said, let's listen in to this replay of a TikTok live. There's a lot of interest on social media about identification of predators, but also holding victims responsible for toxic behavior. I've talked about this a lot. If you've follow me at any level, you know this is something that's very close to my heart, something I'm very passionate about. A lot of us like to put the responsibility for getting into a toxic relationship on victims. And I think it's a way, because we want to stay safe. So we think that if we could become better at identifying dangerous people, then we will then stay safe. And on top of it, it makes us not like those who've been injured. We want to create distance from ourselves, from those who get hurt. I certainly understand that. I have a sense of not wanting to be, I don't want to identify with that group either. I have now owned my identity as part of that group. And in fact, if you noticed, I don't refer to myself as a survivor, although I certainly am a survivor, but I tend to more often refer to myself as a victim. Why do I do that? Because I feel that it's really important that we understand that the world's not safe, that there are people who not accidentally, but purposefully seek out others to injure. So back to this book called The Game by Neil Strauss. Now, I know, if I remember correctly, I think Neil has come out to change his perspective and said that he wants to distance himself from the book that he wrote. And it's interesting because he writes it as a memoir. So it's really kind of his experience of being an insecure, sexless guy who then gets into this underculture of manipulative, exploitive men who have grudges. And they have a sense of entitlement that they feel their lack of experience, you know, physical experience is sort of an entitled thing. And they begin to pursue how to have more of these relationships. So he finds several mentors in the book who then begin to teach him. These are men who've acquired a skill to pick up women, and he begins to mentor them. And in this process, he teaches you as you read it what he's learning. You learn with him what he's learning. And it's fascinating because it's fascinating in a morbid, scary way, what he shares with you. So let me share a couple things that I'm just in the beginning. I'm in probably the first third of the book. And one of the things that they share is that, and what's really powerful to me about this is that they're using I think it's NLP. I'm not sure if I'm using the initials right. It's this neuralistic programming. They're using neuralistic programming as a way to bypass a person's consciousness and in order to hypnotically control them. The name of the book, again, is called The Game by Neil Strauss. It's based on a person's real story, NLP. Yes, they're using NLP to bypass your consciousness, your conscious control, to make you highly suggestible. which again, like I started, we want to put a lot of responsibility on victims for getting to toxic relationships, which if you notice my latest content the last 2 days, I've been talking about that, talking about, are we actually codependent? Are we really vulnerable people who don't have lots of good boundaries? What kind of errors are we making? So one of the things they do, and I think this is fascinating because if I think back, and I would love you to think back too, if I think back to the toxic people that I've met, toxic men that I've met, they did this to me. It's called negging, N-E-G-G-I-N-G, negging. So watch for this. One of the things they do is if they're going to target you, and especially if you're the prettiest person in the group, if they're going to target you, what they will do is they will say a negative comment wrapped in a compliment. I'll tell you how it was used with me, but I also will give you some examples out of the book. One of the examples is a guy came up to a woman and said, "Oh, you have such an overbite. It reminds me of Bugs Bunny, but it's so cute on your face. It really adds to your complexion and your look. It's so cute." Another way that they might do that is they would come in and say, "You know, you have such a beautiful smile, but right here, you got something right here." They'll do something that will be sweet, but they're also at the same time pointing out a defect. How it happened to me, I had experienced it twice. Both times it was regarding the use of a photo. So with my ex, I was showing him my childhood photos. And for some reason, I happened to have a photo of, it's probably during the most vulnerable time of my life. I'd gotten chubby just before I had this big spurt of growth. My hair was cut in this really awkward, funny cut, ugly cut. I was wearing wrong clothes. I was growing and I needed clothes to fit better. It was kind of too tight. And I wasn't heavy. I was just, you know, chubby, kind of pudgy. And I have a sweet expression on my face, but it's a dorky expression, really dorky. And I'm with my sisters and we're feeding the goats or feeding the sheep. And I'm kind of grinning up at the camera. And for some reason, I don't know why I happen to have it because I really don't like it. It's an ugly photo. He saw it. My ex saw it and said, "Oh, that's the cutest photo of you I've ever seen. I need a copy. I need a copy of that photo." And then I thought, well, okay, you know, it's sort of stupid, but why would I not give him a copy of it? So I sent him a digital copy of it. And periodically, he would pull this out and say, he'd make me look at it. "Look at this photo. I think you're so cute here." And yet inside, I'm just feeling like I'm dying because I remember that stage of life, that stage of my adolescence, how awkward I felt, how I wasn't fitting in, how I wasn't pop. I mean, to me, it was like this whole host of feelings, but he liked to pull it out in order to remind me of a time where I was very vulnerable. Here's another example that he did to me too, that it's interesting because now that I'm thinking about negging, I'm realizing that where it is. So this is what I want you to be thinking about. I want you to be thinking about when you have been someone who's used it with you, because what it does is that it creates I'll talk about how it impacts you psychologically. I'm going to wait on that. So the other example he gave me was we would go out to try on clothes and we were living in a culture where I'm 5'7", so I'm taller than probably 95% of all the women in this culture. And on top of it, I'm just a large woman. I always have been. I have like my ring finger is size 9. I wear size 10 shoes. I wear men's gloves. I'm a big woman. So for me to go shopping, it's really difficult. It's hard to find any clothes that would fit. But he would want to take me shopping and he'd pick out the ugliest one, which I knew didn't work with my figure, was a bad match with me. And then he would say out loud in front of this whole store, he would say, "You know, my mom always said that I was never one to go for Barbie dolls." And I would hear this, and of course, I would want to die because first of all, it's said publicly. And yeah, Barbie, by the way, is not unrealistic. No one has a Barbie figure. She's an impossible example. I mean, they've actually tried to look at what she would look like as an adult, as a human woman. She's an impossible thing. But he would say this multiple times. And if I ever reacted, he'd say, "I don't know why you take that so personal. I'm not being negative." I'm like, it's not a compliment. It's not a compliment. Be about like me saying to a man, "You know, for a man with a small dick, you sure do well with it." I mean, who wants to hear that? It's just bad. It's just bet. I would never get nasty back, but I would want to. I'd want to. So why do people do this? What's the purpose? When you're meeting a predator, why would they say this to you? What's the purpose of it? So watch for this, by the way. So if you meet somebody and they do this strategy, there's a purpose to it. Well, the purpose is to increase your sense of sensitivity and make you feel thrown off. So now you're not in your A game. You're now feeling shaky and insecure. And then it creates a desire in you to prove this person wrong, to show up in some way, to overcome what you now see in their eyes is a defect about you. So now you're more invested in seeking their approval. So watch for that, because it's done for this. They're doing this for the reason to get this from you. They want to throw you into this position so that now that you're more receptive. And interestingly enough, what's so frightening about this book, The Game, is how successful they are, how they're looking for tests and signs of your receptivity. And then they begin to like get your phone number. And it's just, so why am I talking about this here? Because when we meet narcissistic or predatory people, predatory men, I want to talk about men right now. I'm not saying women don't do this. They do it, but they do different things. They have different strategies. But men have certain types of men have reasons for put us in positions to make us vulnerable and suggestible and susceptible to their charm. And charm, by the way, guys, it's interesting. I got so much flack for that short clip on, you know, be careful about charm. It's one of my most popular videos. Charm, I'm using charm not as kindness or warmth or friendliness. I'm talking about an effort to manipulatively disarm you so that you fall more vulnerably under their sway and influence. It's a strategy that people who want to sell you something, whether it's to sell you a car or to sell you on themselves, they're doing this as a way to sway you in order to manipulate you. So be very, very careful about that. Whose fault is it? When victims become injured, should we put the responsibility on the predator or the offender or the abuser, however you want to label this person? Or should we look at ourselves and hold ourselves accountable? Are you aware that I have other social media platforms? I have short form videos on TikTok and Instagram, as well as posts on Instagram, and then longer form on YouTube. Recently, I just posted a blind reaction video to TLC's hit show, Unexpected. Be sure to check it out and let me know what you think. You can find me across most platforms at the handle of Carrie McAvoy, PhD. When it comes back to predatory behavior and who's to blame, where should we put the responsibility? What are your thoughts about that? If you've been victimized by a woman or a man, whether you're a man who's gotten into a relationship with a woman, or you're a woman who's gotten into a relationship with a man, or maybe you're LGBTQ+ and you've gotten into a relationship with somebody and they were hurtful to you, do you feel like we should put the responsibility on the victim, on us? Or should we be considered that we should be looking at the person who did this? I would love to know. I do think that we have an accountability to become better at identifying predatory behavior, but sometimes it's hard. The one that I posted today, I actually have been having a conversation with the creator, Coach M, about her video, so let me back up for those of you who don't know. There is a creator probably she's on Instagram too. I wouldn't know why she wouldn't be, but she's on TikTok. She calls, her handle's called Please Message Me. She's Coach M. Wonderful content. She's hard hitting. And she really wants all of us to be more accountable. I love that she's willing to sort of cut through the crap to challenge us. Well, there's been a song that's going around that's kind of a sad song, and women are coming on and sharing their really horrific stories, like shockingly horrific stories. One of them apparently had been shot in the belly to kill the baby. I mean, like mouth-dropping, awful stories. And she came on and said, listen, I'm moved by your stories. I'm like stunned by the horrific things people have survived. But she's, and this is what she said, it hit me hard in a good way, but also in a hard way. She said, people don't do these catastrophically awful things out of nowhere. There's early signs that you overlooked. I mean, she's talking to the victim, that you overlooked and you didn't realize that you were putting yourself into danger by not calling them out faster. It isn't like they just went from 0 to 100. They incrementally went up from 0 to 100 and you missed the change. You missed where it was becoming increasingly dangerous. I came back with a rebuttal. There are people who actually enter a relationship with the purpose of deception, and the entire thing is a con. And that happened to me. And not always are there clear signs. Some of the signs are no more difficult than you would see with a lot of people. They're doing no more worse things. I gave an example of, in my case, mine was critical. You know, he'd kind of be a bit of a know-it-all. But honestly, how many of us have been in a relationship with somebody who is a bit of a know-it-all? And do you see that as such a toxic thing, and that it could possibly suggest such danger that you would limit your contact with that person? Now, the me that I am today, I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with somebody who's critical. I really wouldn't. And I wouldn't probably let that person super close to me. But at the time when I met this person, I've had 50 some years of my life being taught to keep myself small, easygoing, compliant. And I had been around lots of critical people. So it wasn't certainly new behavior. And most of the critical people in my life always were well-meaning for the most part. They wanted good things for me. They weren't like trying to harm me. So for me, I didn't realize that this person actually had a second double life. My ex was living a secret life, completely separate secret life, and that it would impact me, would be a very bad impact on me. So that was what I challenged her on, is for us to put the responsibility on everybody that the escalation is a failure of ours to spot it as escalation, as even risk, that we need to take ownership for that. So I'd love to know what you think about this. I kind of sit on the fence. I mean, I don't want us not to pick up symptoms and signs of dangerousness, but I also think it's unfair for us to have the full weight of the responsibility sit on us as if it's our fault. That's, to me, really hard. To me, that then takes the light off on where it really belongs, is that in a perfect world, we wouldn't have dangerous people. These people wouldn't exist. And then we wouldn't need to be doing this at all. I mean, if you think about it, do you really want your children to have to learn how to be, to lose their innocence and to become savvy in a cruel world? I wish I wouldn't have to teach my kids that. I don't want to teach my kids that. I raised 3 boys. It was really hard for me to say to them, you cannot go to the bathroom in McDonald's by yourself. You're not allowed to do that. It was very difficult for me to make sure they always had to buddy up and then teach them the difference between safe touch and not safe touch, and to tell them that not every person they meet is a good person or has their best intention. I don't like destroying that sense of safety, but in order to keep them safe, I had to teach them that to keep them safe. So for us then to turn around and look at each other and say, and it's your fault too, to me, it's a sad statement that we say to women. It's mostly women. It's not that it doesn't happen to men. I know I have men here right here today, even, who have been had this happen to them, but it's very hard for us to look at men and women and say, well, you know, you let them boss you around a little too much. And when they put you down in public, and when they eye rolled, and when they, you know, when they kind of didn't take responsibility, when they talked about their ex, you missed all of that. So this is now your fault because of this. So yeah, I find that very, very uncomfortable. Well, I don't know about you, but this whole topic evokes a lot of intense feelings in me and a lot of other people. It's really asking the question of who's to blame. I'd love to hear what you think. Drop me a comment or shoot me an email and let me know who you think we should hold responsible for predatory behavior or for falling victim to predatory behavior.
By the way, these are the kind of topics I address on my other social media platforms. Are you following me on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube? In fact, on each platform, I offer something slightly different. I'd love to see you over there, and be sure you let me know when you're on one of those platforms that you're a podcast listener. So thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll see you back here on Thursday. Bye-bye.